Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Iowa Republican Marionette Miller Meeks, who joins us to discuss the healthcare needs of rural America. But first, here's this week's headlines. Jim Jones is the Food and Drug Administration's pick for the agency's first Deputy Commissioner for Human Foods. Jones will be in charge of setting and advancing priorities for the agency's proposed human foods program. He previously spent time with the Environmental Protection Agency, where he focused on the regulation of pesticides and other chemicals. He says that experience will help him lead this new area of the federal government. In other news, USDA began its hearing process to consider updates to the federal milk marketing order. The hearings will likely last 5 to 7 weeks. During that time, farmers and processors will have the opportunity to talk directly with USDA officials. USDA plans to consider testimony on 5 different topic areas. And finally, California farmers are cleaning up the damage left behind by Tropical Storm Hillary. Many roads and fields were covered in mud after more than a foot of rain in some places. But some producers in the state tell us, while they do have some damage, their losses were limited by the period of the growing season for the specialty crops in the area. 1 month later, and things would have been much worse. The California storms and devastating wildfires in Hawaii can be expected to be among a long list of disasters on the agenda as Congress considers government funding levels when it returns to Washington next month. The Biden administration is seeking a supplemental $12 billion in funding for a federal disaster relief fund, and Congress needs to pass a bill to avoid a government shutdown by the end of September. To start our conversation with Representative Marionette Miller Meeks, we asked her what she's expecting from September's funding conversations.
What I really think is going to happen is we will have discussion of a continuing resolution. As you know, we have appropriations bills that we have to get through. There's 12 appropriations bills. We have the farm bill, very important to your listeners and to me, to get through. So I expect that we'll have a continuing resolution. So we're going to be meeting with other members of Congress to find out, you know, what it will take to get that continuing resolution passed, and then the length of time that we think we need so we can get our appropriations bills done and then passed and over to the Senate.
I want to spend the bulk of our time together talking about rural health care, but a couple of political questions before we get into that. We did see this week the GOP presidential debate candidates, or the majority of them, gathered in Milwaukee for a debate. We saw earlier this month a number of those candidates also perusing the grounds of the Iowa State Fair. I wonder, as you look at the comments that you've heard from the candidates to this point and kind of view them through the lens of agricultural and rural policy, what have you heard?
Well, certainly there, you know, there are questions we have in Iowa that we ask candidates. One is about the renewable fuel standard. You know, their positions on ag, on trade, on the farm bill. In Iowa, we feed and fuel the world, we like to say. But also it's very important because agriculture has a tremendous, conservation agenda. It has contributions to reducing emissions. So if you're concerned about the climate and the environment, agriculture is helping through biofuels to be able to reduce emissions. We're also looking at, in our state, renewables such as wind and solar. We have over 50% of our energy in Iowa is from renewables. And so I think getting that point across that agriculture is part of a solution, if that's the most important issue. So we ask the candidates all of these questions, and we expect to get answers, even if they're tough or controversial questions. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you mentioned the fact that you've got a lot of these candidates running around. Of course, that is largely happening not because they, don't love Iowa, but because Iowa's first in line when it comes to making this selection. And we've seen some changes on that front in the other party, the Democratic Party, looking at South Carolina to kick things off, but the Republican Party sticking with the Iowa caucuses for that first in the nation status. As an elected official from Iowa, why do you think it's important for the state of Iowa to remain first in line when it comes to presidential selection?
Well, certainly you're going to hear from Iowans that we should remain first in line because we take it very seriously. We show up, we meet with candidates, we talk with candidates, we ask the tough questions of the candidates in Iowa. We turn out in order to be able to interact with the candidates. We're also very informed voters, but it's even more than that. in Iowa, because of how we do things, and we're first in the nation as a caucus, you don't have to be the most funded, well-funded candidate. You don't have to be the best known candidate. You can be a little known candidate with not a lot of funds. But if you do the groundwork in Iowa, that can propel you to the top. And we've really seen that with Vivek Ramaswamy. I've been saying since the springtime that he's the person to look out for. And I think that people saw at the debate last evening, if they watched it, or if they've been looking at the polls, is that he's really come up. And that's because candidates that spend time in Iowa tend to do well in the caucuses. So we've had those candidates, they're here. But it really gives you an opportunity. Whereas if, you know, in primary states like, such as the Democrats changing to South Carolina, you have to be well-funded and TV ads. You don't get to vet a candidate with a 30-second TV ad.
We'll talk rural health care with Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meeks right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Before her time in Congress, Iowa Republican Marionette Miller Meeks was a practicing physician and a state official studying the issue. She says those experiences gave her insights into the biggest problem facing rural health care.
It would be access. So as you know, with changes made to the Affordable Care Act in 2010, there's been increased consolidation. That's both for facilities and for providers. So getting providers to rural areas to be able to stay there, remain there. And so the consolidation aspect that, you know, makes it much more difficult to have an independent practice and especially an independent practice to keep up with inflation, that has removed providers from rural areas. So first and foremost, things that we've done in strengthening Medicare for Patients and Providers Act, you know, having an inflation adjustment update for providers, for physicians, what we've done on graduate medical education to get more physicians trained and educated. We know in Iowa that if you both go to medical school here and do your residency here, you're more likely to remain in Iowa. You know, overregulation really burdens providers. And so if you're spending more time in the administrative burden of a practice rather than seeing patients, that reduces the ability of providers to remain in practice. The bills we've done on telehealth and having telehealth access, not having to go to a facility, but being able to remain in your home, that helps providers in local areas. So those are things that we're working on. And then something I think very familiar to your listeners is being able to get insurance through an association plan.
What do you envision as the role of government here? Because in a lot of cases, these healthcare providers, you know, do have a private sector component to them. But if this is an issue of access for a good chunk of the population living in rural America, what do you think is the role of government in, you know, supporting these facilities and supporting the physicians that might need to be recruited there or perhaps stay there?
Supporting physicians through the graduate medical education program. Another way government is involved, and this is more state government, that's in tort reform. Iowa had become a magnet for liability cases. So our state, I had, as a state senator, had done a bill on the Senate side. We didn't get it passed, but they got it passed in Iowa this past year. So that's important in helping providers in that area. And then, you know, there are other ways. The Medicare formula has a geographic index, which has disadvantaged rural states by reimbursing them less. And so if you're a provider or a hospital that mainly has Medicaid and Medicare as your patient base, that payer mix makes it difficult because the reimbursement is so low, especially on Medicaid and then Medicare right after that. So those are some of the role. Graduate medical education, as you know, that is covered by the federal government so that we can train physicians. And then in our visa program, so we bring foreign medical graduates into the United States if they go practice in a rural area for 3 years. So those are roles. And then an important role is sometimes, not only sometimes, but quite a bit, the government actually puts in barriers through the regulation they pass, which make it more difficult.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a handful of your legislative priorities, and you also mentioned earlier that, of course, there is a Farm Bill reauthorization process underway on Capitol Hill right now. Can you walk us through kind of the Venn diagram there in terms of what you think are your priorities when it comes to rural health care and things you might be able to move or perhaps advance through a Farm Bill reauthorization?
Graduate medical education, I think that's going to be very difficult to put into a Farm Bill. And then an inflation adjustment for providers or physicians. As you know, just like people in agriculture or farmers having to deal with the higher input costs, providers in independent practices have to deal with the higher input costs too. I think those things would be very difficult to put within a Farm Bill. But other things as far as telehealth and association plans, they could be. It just depends on whether or not we think we're going to be able to pass the Farm Bill. So I don't think we're going to put things in the Farm Bill that make it more difficult for members to vote. So we've got to get the Farm Bill passed. We got to get the reauthorization done. And it's always a contentious piece of reauthorization. This will be my first one, but by history, that's what I'm told. So from our standpoint, our state, I would rather things on healthcare go in another vehicle than to prevent the Farm Bill from getting reauthorized in a timely fashion.
Very good. Well, plenty to keep an eye on when it comes to rural health care and the Farm Bill. Congresswoman Miller Meeks, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pagel takes a look at some of the struggling rural hospitals across the country in this week's Map It Out.
Many rural hospitals are at risk of closing down due to uncertain financial circumstances. This map shows the percentage of a state's rural hospitals on the brink of shutting down according to a 2022 report from the Center for Healthcare Quality and Payment Reform. Across the country, 631 of the nation's roughly 2,200 rural hospitals could close. That figure includes half of the 158 rural hospitals in Texas. Kansas has 104 rural hospitals, and 60 are in danger of closing. The report also says more than 200 of these hospitals were at an immediate risk of closing down. Finances for many rural hospitals improved during the COVID-19 pandemic as a result of government relief funds. But the loss of those funds and other challenges, such as labor shortages and rising costs, have emerged. Financing rural healthcare facility construction is expected to be a hot topic in the upcoming Farm Bill. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are going to continue our conversation on rural healthcare, the issues facing it, and the future solutions that could be deployed. Joined for that conversation by Florence Beacott with the National Farm Medicine Center and Alan Morgan with the National Rural Health Association. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Alan, I want to go to you first because we look at this situation and obviously everyone knows the importance of healthcare in urban or rural America, of course. But I do wonder, as you study the issues, as you study the complex topic that is rural healthcare, where have the trend lines been pointing in the last decade or so?
Well, it's absolutely right. Rural's not a small version of urban. It's a unique healthcare delivery environment. And the challenge for rural is you've got limited access to healthcare providers in a population that really needs access to healthcare, whether it's the farmers and ranchers, the elderly living in small towns in rural America. And these two forces are meeting to create a situation where healthcare is difficult to access and to deliver.
Mm-hmm. Alan, I wonder, as you study, you know, this issue, are there certain kinds of services that are harder to find than others when you get into farm country? I imagine, you know, the kinds of things where there's three or four specialists of a certain disease in the world, it doesn't matter if you're in a city or in farm country, but specific to farm country, are specific services harder to find?
Oh, absolutely. It's important to note from a rural standpoint, rural healthcare is primary care, general surgery. So anything outside of that becomes problematic, most notably behavioral health issues and behavioral health healthcare. That's really a crisis right now. And then, as you mentioned, any other specialty care, you're really going to be looking towards urban areas to seek that type of service.
Mm-hmm. Florence, I want to bring you into the fold here because obviously it's well known that farming is a very dangerous, very risky profession, very injury prone line of work. And I wonder, what does the role of kind of the sparsity of healthcare options for many people in rural America, what role does that play in sort of the long-term impact of some of these diseases that are not diseases, injuries that folks might encounter on the job?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. And I think that the issue of access to healthcare as well as health insurance play a big role. We often hear that farmers are people who don't like to go to the doctor, who don't want to go to the doctor. But the research that we've done over the years shows that the story, as you point to, is a lot more complicated. And we've heard of people who say, I will go to the doctor. I will seek care, but it's not available or it's not affordable. One of the things that we learned a lot and points to the importance of the role of health insurance is how people delay care until they're 65, which is the point when they become eligible for Medicare.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Florence Beacott with the National Farm Medicine Center says even though the nation's producers are often insured at fairly high rates, that doesn't necessarily mean they are out of the woods when it comes to healthcare costs.
From what we know is that farmers historically have been insured at a higher rate than the general population in the 90, you know, over 90%. But then it's when we look at what that coverage looks like. And the challenges are around cost of premiums, high premiums that are expensive for folks, as well as what does that coverage look like. And we've seen challenges connected to underinsurance. And indeed, when we asked folks in our research if they had a medical debt, one in five farm families said that, yes, they did have a medical debt. But then when we asked, are you concerned about your ability to pay for major expenses in case of a major illness or injury without going into debt, over half of farm families at this point said that, yes, they were concerned because of what their coverage looks like. And what we found, again, was that problem of underinsurance.
Well, and I, you know, just looking behind the curtain at my own personal experience, I grew up on a family farm and was my health insurance came from my mom's job that she had through the Department of Agriculture. You know, she had the job in town and my dad had the job on the farm. I have to imagine there's a lot of folks in very similar situations that perhaps rely on spousal coverage or maybe even have a second job in town to provide health care. What does that process or what does that picture look like in terms of folks that are maybe self-employed, you know, fully paying paying for their own insurance versus maybe going through the military or some kind of other occupation to pursue their healthcare options?
Absolutely. When we asked the question about, do you have an off-farm job? Over 70% said that yes, they did. And what we know is that that off-farm job was both for additional income as well as for access to health insurance. And here's where it connects back with Alan, actually. What we do know is that in rural areas, some of the jobs that will offer the better benefits, the better health insurance, tend to be public sector jobs. So you talked about your mom working at the Agency of Ag, but also working in the healthcare system, working in education. And so it's really the importance, too, of thinking about health insurance, both from the perspective of health and safety, but also from the perspective of rural economic development, what types of jobs are available in rural areas, as well as what type of health insurance coverage do they offer.
Alan, let me ask you, I mean, as you look at the situation, you know, coast to coast, do you see that there are perhaps, looking at strictly in terms of availability, are there good pockets and bad pockets? What does that look like?
Absolutely, without a doubt. You can track insurance coverage by where you find hospital closures. And we've had 11 hospital closed just this year. We've had 135 since 2010, primarily in the Southeast. And again, it's a reflective of a situation where you have a community without health insurance who then present themselves to facilities and they have to bear the brunt of that cost, which closes the doors on these rural hospitals. It's really important to note these hospitals are the largest employers in most of these small towns, number one. And number two, it just really isn't safe to live or work in a community that's more than 30 miles or 30 minutes from a 24/7 emergency room service. So that's important to note.
Mm-hmm. And wrapping up the conversation here, Alan, as we look toward, you know, what does a solution look like? Is this an area where perhaps Congress, the federal government, maybe state governments need to get involved and provide resources? Is this a private sector, nonprofits resolution issue? What does National Rural Health see as, you know, a or perhaps one of several solutions here?
Yeah, as long as states are providing insurance coverage through Medicaid and the federal government is providing insurance coverage through Medicare, it really needs to be a local, state, and federal partnership to make sure that we keep these access points open, the clinics open, and the hospitals open. So it needs to be a coordinated response as we move forward.
Very good. Well, obviously a very multifaceted issue, the problems of rural healthcare access and availability and insurance coverage as well. A variety of different directions this conversation could have gone, but Florence and Alan, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through the changing cost of a dairy risk management program in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Milk margins have come down significantly, and that is triggering payments through USDA's Dairy Margin Coverage Program. Under that program, producers select a coverage level and can receive payments determined by the margin between the price of milk and the feed expenses facing dairy farmers. Coverage is available up to $9.50. Any prices below that trigger a payment for the difference based on coverage levels. This chart shows the income over feed cost calculation for milk over a two-year stretch from June 2021 to this June. You can see margins for this June fell to $3.65 per hundredweight of milk. That's the lowest margin USDA has recorded in the history of the program, and it's been dropping for most of the last year. If current trends continue, producers can expect to keep seeing payments. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you, that's who, as your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward, moving you forward.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers are expected to issue their new definition of a water of the United States. I'll be headed to the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. Hope to see many of you there. We'll keep you up to date with our coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.